Hello everyone, welcome to Inertia. We obsess over optimizing every aspect of life for maximum speed, but have we considered how this relentless drive might actually weaken the very foundations we stand on when things inevitably go wrong? Imagine a woman lying flat on her back, her body compressed against a hard medical bed, while a room full of machines monitors her every breath. This is the standard image of birth in the modern hospital, a scene of controlled efficiency where the human body is treated like a machine that must be optimized for the convenience of the observer. Yet, for thousands of years, women stood, knelt, or squatted to give birth, working with gravity to help their children enter the world. Somewhere along the line, we traded that natural efficiency for a system that prioritizes monitoring over physiology. We built a bed that works against the body, and we called it progress. Now, look at your own mind when you ask an AI chatbot for advice. Do you check the answer, or do you just accept it because the screen looks authoritative? We are building systems in code, in hospitals, and in our own thinking that override natural dependencies in the name of speed, and when those systems fail, the cost is not just a bug report or a medical complication. It is the fragility of the human experience itself. The paradigm of reactive programming did not originate in modern web development, but emerged in the 1970s as a formal approach to system design. During this decade, engineers began conceptualizing architectures where changes in data sources automatically propagate through a graph of dependent computations. This historical foundation established a model where state is not merely stored but dynamically linked, ensuring that derived values update without manual intervention. The concept relies on the principle that once a rule is defined within the application world, the program enforces it over time, creating a runtime environment where dependencies are respected automatically. This shift from imperative to declarative state management laid the groundwork for future optimizations that prioritize automatic synchronization over explicit instruction, fundamentally altering how software handles data flow and establishes lineage that persists through modern frameworks. This idea was eventually formalized as reactive programming, a paradigm that describes systems where changes in data sources automatically propagate through a graph of dependent computations, exactly what signals do in the contemporary landscape. Early JavaScript implementations brought these theoretical concepts into the browser environment during the first decade of the 2000s. Libraries like Knockout JS arrived in 2010, offering developers a mechanism to manage data binding without direct DOM manipulation. Shortly after, RxJS launched in 2012, further popularizing reactive ideas by introducing observable sequences that allowed asynchronous event streams to be handled like synchronous data flows. These tools demonstrated that complex state dependencies could be managed through libraries rather than core language features, proving the viability of reactive patterns in client-side applications. By abstracting away the complexity of change propagation, these frameworks allowed developers to focus on defining rules rather than managing the execution of those rules, setting a precedent for the signal abstractions that followed in the subsequent decade of development. The documentation for Knockout.com and RxJS Dev further illustrates the depth of these early implementations and their influence on later standards. Willy Bronner's explanation of the reactive world illustrates how these rules function in practice today. He describes a scenario where a y value must equal 2x, meaning whenever x changes, y automatically adjusts to comply with the established rule. He further notes that z must equal y plus 1, creating a chain where derived values behave like pure functions with no side effects. This behavior mirrors spreadsheet logic, where dependent cells update instantly, and it is now the core mechanism behind signals in production frameworks like SolidJS and Vue. developers have been using signals in production for years via several modern front-end frameworks, including Preact, Angular, and Svelte. The standardization effort is ongoing, with the TC39 proposal signals currently at stage 1, aiming to make this model native to JavaScript. This adoption across multiple frameworks indicates a consensus that fine-grained reactivity is essential for modern application performance, reducing the need for manual state updates while increasing the reliance on automated dependency graphs. Libraries like Solid Signals and Preact Signals demonstrate the maturity of this ecosystem. However, the efficiency gained through this push-pull algorithm introduces a specific architectural fragility. The system relies on eagerly propagating invalidation via push while lazily re-evaluating via pull, a combination analyzed by researchers like Canal Elliott in his work on push-pull functional reactive programming. While this balances responsiveness with efficiency, it creates a rigid dependency graph where the external control mechanism dictates every state change. When the rules governing the world are defined, the program can no longer change them, locking the architecture into a specific set of behaviors. This optimization of state management reduces the cognitive load on the developer, but risks creating systems where natural dependencies are overridden by automated rules that cannot adapt to unexpected inputs without breaking the entire graph. Cache invalidation becomes crucial because when a signal changes, dependent computed values become stale and must be flagged for recalculation. Bronner's own signal playground implementation highlights the naive nature of understanding this system compared to complex libraries like Alien Signals or Solid Signals. Yet even these advanced systems face the same fundamental constraint of automated rule enforcement. When you execute the line count value equals 5 in a modern reactive system, you are not merely updating a variable, but triggering a cascade of notifications managed by a global stack array. This mechanism allows frameworks like Solid, Vue, and Svelte to bypass the explicit dependency arrays required in React, relying instead on an automatic tracking system established during execution. The push-based notification system eagerly propagates invalidation through the graph the moment a signal changes, ensuring that every subscriber knows immediately that their cached data is stale. In the specific implementation detailed by Willy Bronner in his Signal Playground, the setter for a signal updates the internal value and then notifies all subscribers without passing the new state, dispatching only a signal that change has occurred. This synchronous setDuty call ensures that each node is invalidated as the update passes through it, creating a precise chain of dependency awareness that avoids the overhead of manual dependency declarations. The system does not wait for the user to request data. It proactively marks the graph as dirty, prioritizing speed of notification over the actual computation of new values. To prevent unnecessary computation, the system relies on a dirty flag to manage cache invalidation and lazy reevaluation, marking a computed value as ready for recalculation only when its sources change. By default, this dirty flag is set to true because the system must compute the value of a computed function the first time it is accessed, establishing the baseline for future comparisons. Inside the internal function internal compute, the system pushes information into the global stack to register sources, effectively creating a magic link between the currently running computed and the signals it accesses. This approach means the computed being read has no knowledge of the entire dependency tree, knowing only its immediate sources and subscribers, which simplifies the mental model for developers. However, this efficiency comes with a constraint. The cache is only cleared when the dirty flag is toggled, meaning the actual mathematical operation inside FN is deferred until absolutely necessary. This specific caching strategy found in libraries like Preact and Angular ensures that expensive operations are not repeated during rapid state changes, optimizing the render cycle at the cost of introducing hidden state management complexity. The pull-based reevaluation occurs only when a computed value is accessed, completing the hybrid algorithm that balances eager notification with lazy calculation. This pull mechanism traces its lineage to the reactive programming paradigm formalized in the 1970s, where changes in data sources automatically propagate through a graph of dependent computations. Early JavaScript implementations like Knockout JS in 2010 and RxJS in 2012 brought these reactive ideas to the browser, establishing the pattern where a getter looks at the internal dirty flag before returning a cached value. When the program accesses double count value, it triggers internal compute to reevaluate the computation only if the flag indicates the data is stale, effectively pulling the new value up the tree from the signal source. This distinction is critical because it separates the notification of change from the execution of logic, allowing the system to handle complex dependency trees without recalculating every node in the graph simultaneously. The result is a fine-grained reactivity system that feels instantaneous to the user but operates through a strictly controlled sequence of invalidation and retrieval. While this architecture achieves remarkable efficiency, it creates a system where external control mechanisms override natural dependencies, leading to fragile architectures that hide their own complexity. The reliance on a global stack array to track currently running functions introduces a single point of failure where any mismanagement of the stack depth could corrupt the dependency graph for the entire application. This mirrors the broader pursuit of optimized efficiency in software and cognition, where the drive to remove manual overhead like dependency arrays often obscures the underlying logic from the developer. The magic link between signals and computeds feels seamless, yet it requires the system to maintain a hidden state of which functions are currently executing, creating a dependency on the runtime environment that is invisible in the source code. Comparing this naive version to the great Alien Signals library reveals that even optimized implementations rely on this same fragile stack-based tracking. Ultimately, this optimization trades explicit control for implicit behavior, a trade-off that deepens the fragility of the architecture whenever the underlying assumptions about execution order change. On April 3, 2026, Kyle Orland of Ars Technica highlighted a troubling trend emerging from the Wharton Business School, where marketing researchers Stephen Shaw and Gideon Nave coined the phrase cognitive surrender to describe a new psychological dependency. In their study involving 1,372 participants, subjects were given an adapted cognitive reflection test while granted access to an AI chatbot designed to provide assistance. The results revealed a stark willingness to offload mental labor. When the chatbot provided correct answers, participants accepted them 93% of the time, but even when the AI was explicitly wrong, they accepted the erroneous advice 80% of the time. This behavior suggests that users are not merely using a tool, but are actively allowing external algorithms to trump their own internal reasoning processes. Despite the known risks of the replication crisis in psychology, where experimental results sometimes cannot be replicated, Shaw and Nave argue that this phenomenon creates a new layer of dependency they term System 3, an artificial crutch that supplements or substitutes internal cognition with externally processed insights. The authors write that people readily incorporate AI-generated outputs into their decision-making processes with minimal friction or skepticism, effectively outsourcing the deliberative work required for accuracy. This seamless engagement reduces cognitive effort and accelerates decisions, but it also introduces a vulnerability where the system's efficiency overrides the user's critical verification. The study found that those who used AI rated their confidence 11.7% higher than those who did not, even when the AI's guidance was incorrect, indicating a dangerous inflation of self-assurance detached from actual competence and verification. To understand this shift, one must look at the framework established by the late Daniel Kahneman in his influential book Thinking, Fast and Slow. Kahneman distinguished between System 1, which is fast, intuitive, and effective, and System 2, which is slow, deliberative, and analytical. The cognitive reflection test used in the Wharton study, such as the question asking how long it takes 100 machines to make 100 widgets if 5 machines take 5 minutes for 5 widgets, is designed to force engagement with System 2. The intuitive System 1 answer is 100 minutes, but the correct analytical answer is 5 minutes, yet the AI intervention allows users to bypass this necessary mental friction entirely without engaging the analytical reasoning required for the solution. The terminology of cognitive surrender itself is not entirely new, having previously appeared in the work of theologian Peter Berger during the 1990s. Berger used the phrase to describe surrendering faith in God, to relieve cognitive dissonance, a spiritual parallel to the modern secular offloading of thought to machines. While Berger's context involved religious conviction and mental peace, the mechanism of relieving internal tension by accepting an external authority remains consistent. This historical precedent highlights that the human desire to avoid the labor of independent verification is a persistent psychological trait, now merely accelerated by vast computational resources and the specific architecture of large language. Ultimately, the emergence of System 3 signals a fragility where optimized efficiency creates a hollowed-out capacity for independent thought. When the confidence of a user rises 11.7% without a corresponding increase in accuracy, the architecture of human decision-making becomes reliant on a black box that may fail without warning. Just as the sitcom character Tim Taylor relied on his neighbor Wilson for advice he could not replicate, modern users accept AI insights they cannot verify, creating a brittle dependency where the removal of the external tool leaves the internal system unprepared to function without the artificial support. On Home Improvement, Tim would always completely accept Wilson's wisdom, yet when Tim tried to repeat it, he would mangle it so horribly that it frequently called into question whether he had performed any cognitive reflection at all. Researchers Shaw and Nave recently quantified the fragility of human cognition when paired with automated tools, revealing a specific vulnerability in how modern minds process externalized intelligence. In their experiment, 1,372 participants were administered a test designed to measure analytical reasoning while being granted optional access to an AI chatbot for assistance. This specific cohort represents a critical sample size that exposes the mechanics of what the authors term cognitive surrender, where individuals seamlessly integrate AI-generated outputs into their decision-making processes with minimal friction. The test utilized was an adapted version of the cognitive reflection test, presenting brainbusters that require slow, deliberative reasoning rather than fast, intuitive processing. One classic example asks how long it takes 100 machines to make 100 widgets if 5 machines take 5 minutes, a question where the intuitive answer is often incorrect. When these participants consulted the chatbot, they did so about half the time, yet the results showed a troubling pattern of dependency that undermines the very goal of optimized efficiency. The data reveals a stark divergence between accuracy and acceptance, specifically regarding the 93% acceptance rate of correct answers versus the 80% acceptance of incorrect ones. While the high acceptance of right answers suggests the tool works when functioning, The 80% rate for wrong answers indicates that users are not critically verifying the information provided by the system. They let the bad advice trump their own brains, accepting errors that require only a moment of reflection to identify. This behavior illustrates the value and integration of System 3, but also highlights the vulnerability of System 3 usage in real-world scenarios. The seamless engagement accelerates decisions and reduces cognitive effort, but it does so by supplementing or substituting internal cognition with externally processed insights. When the external resource fails, the internal resource has atrophied or is simply overridden by the authority of the interface. This dynamic suggests that the convenience of having an answer immediately available is often purchased at the price of verifying its truth, creating a feedback loop where error is normalized as long as the system appears authoritative. The authors note that this minimal friction allows people to incorporate outputs without skepticism, fundamentally altering the decision-making landscape. Even more concerning is the psychological shift observed in the 11.7% increase in confidence ratings among users who relied on AI despite errors. Those who used the AI rated their confidence higher than those who did not, even when the AI was providing wrong information. This statistical jump demonstrates that the external tool inflates self-assurance without improving actual competence, creating a dangerous illusion of mastery. The authors write that this new artificial crutch is creating a new cognitive layer, distinct from Kahneman's fast and slow systems. It mimics the sitcom character Tim Taylor, who used to ask his neighbor Wilson for advice every week and completely accept it without performing cognitive reflection. In that fictional scenario, Tim would mangle the wisdom so horribly that it questioned whether he had relied on his fast, intuitive system and accepted Wilson's intelligence blindly. Similarly, the modern subject accepts the chatbot's output, believing they are smarter because they have access to vast resources, yet they are often less capable of independent verification. The efficiency gained by offloading thinking to a chatbot leaves the brain too gelatinous to read about the findings in any detail or question the output. Ultimately, this pursuit of optimized decision-making creates architectures where external control mechanisms override natural dependencies, leading to fragile systems. The promise of System 3 is to enhance everyday cognition, yet the empirical evidence suggests it frequently compromises physiological and cognitive outcomes by encouraging blind trust. As companies like OpenAI and Meta push for universal extreme wealth through productivity curves, the underlying human cost remains obscured by stock options and revenue backlogs. Microsoft's Satya Nadella argues AI should bend the productivity curve, yet the cognitive data suggests the curve is bending downward for critical thought. The statistical reality is that we are trading critical thinking for convenience, and the margin of error is growing wider with every automated interaction. We must ask whether the speed of these decisions is worth the loss of the ability to detect when the machine is lying to us. Even if the revenue backlog doubles, the intellectual capital required to manage those systems is evaporating. You must trace the lineage of this fragility back to François Morisseau, whose 1668 book, The Diseases of Women with Child and in Childbed, codified the move toward recumbency. Morisseau explicitly advised that the best and surest way is to be delivered in their bed, to shun the inconvenience and trouble of being carried thither afterwards. But this clinical convenience masked a deeper power shift. There was already a movement emerging to dispense of midwives and instead have male surgeons present at births, transforming a physiological event into a managed procedure. This transition occurred over the past 300 to 400 years, marking the period where women have been largely giving birth on their backs, This represents a sharp deviation from the norm observed in the past. By framing pregnancy as an illness, Morisseau justified the external control mechanism of the medical bed, prioritizing the physician's access over the mother's natural biomechanics. The male physician attending to her required a view that the traditional stool could not provide, effectively engineering a dependency on the hospital infrastructure. Some scholars argue that the change in birthing position may actually be due to another Frenchman who lived the same time as Morisseau, a King Louis XIV. Since Louis XIV reportedly enjoyed watching women giving birth, he became frustrated by the obscured view of birth when it occurred on a birthing stool and promoted the new reclining position. Lauren Duns, a professor of sociology at McDaniel College in Maryland, U.S., wrote in her 1987 paper on the evolution of birthing positions that the king's purported demand for change coincided with the changing of the position. While the influence of the king's policy is unknown, the behavior of royalty must have affected the populace to some degree, cementing the supine posture as a symbol of medical authority rather than physiological necessity. This royal voyeurism turned the laboring woman into a passive patient, stripping her of agency in the name of observation and reinforcing the idea that birth required surveillance by a male authority figure rather than support from a community of. For thousands of years, across the world, women tended to give birth in an upright position, whether kneeling as per Cleopatra, using birthing stools and chairs, or squatting. In fact, squatting can enlarge the pelvic diameter by at least 2 to 5 cm, while working with gravity makes it far easier for the baby to travel downwards through the birthing canal. A baby has to travel downwards through the birthing canal, and gravity is beneficial to the process, yet the medical bed compresses the aorta by the uterus. Most women in post-industrial countries are confined to hospital in recumbent positions, Balaskas says, noting that this practice is illogical and makes birth needlessly complicated and expensive. No other species adopts such a disadvantageous position at such a crucial time, proving that the bed is an artificial constraint rather than a biological imperative. The historical prevalence of birthing chairs across cultures suggests that the upright position was the default until external optimization intervened. This optimization ignores the fact that left to their own devices, women will instinctively lean forward during labor, not backwards. Unfortunately, modern research confirms the detriment of this optimized architecture. In 2011, Hannah Dolan, professor of midwifery at Australia's Western Sydney University, conducted a study on women in labor to understand whether the birth setting impacted the position women adopted. They found the women in birth centers were far more likely to adopt upright positions during the first and second stage of labor compared to a delivery ward setting, with 82% of women doing so in the birth centers compared to 25% in delivery wards. A 2013 statistical review of 25 studies involving more than 5,200 women noted that other important outcomes for women who gave birth upright included a significant reduction in the risk of cesarean birth and less use of epidural. This data suggests that the shift to the bed was not about safety but about standardization, leaving us with a system where efficiency overrides the very biology it claims to protect. The persistence of this posture, despite evidence of inferior outcomes, clearly highlights how deeply the systemic control mechanism has calcified within medical institutions. In 1982, Janet Balaskas published an active birth manifesto, arguing that recumbent positions turn a natural process into a medical event. Balaskas, founder of the Active Birth Center in the UK, observed that women in post-industrial countries are confined to hospital in recumbent positions, a practice she deemed illogical. She noted that throughout the world and for thousands of years, Women have spontaneously labored in upright or crouching positions, yet the modern trend restricts the laboring woman into a passive patient. This shift began roughly 300 to 400 years ago, when giving birth on one's back became a relatively modern phenomenon, influenced by King Louis XIV's purported demand for better view. By prioritizing observer convenience over physiology, the system created a fragile architecture where natural dependencies are overridden by external control mechanisms. The biomechanical consequences of this shift are measurable and significant for the physical process of delivery. Research indicates that squatting can enlarge the pelvic diameter by at least 2 to 5 cm compared to lying down, providing additional space for the baby to travel downwards through the birthing canal. When a woman is left to her own devices, she will instinctively lean forward during labor rather than backwards, adopting positions such as leaning against a low piece of furniture or kneeling as per Cleopatra. Working with gravity makes it far easier to give birth, yet the supine position compresses the aorta with the uterus, reducing oxygenation of the baby in the mother's uterus. This physiological reality suggests that the recumbent position compromises the efficiency of the birth canal, forcing medical interventions to compensate for a disadvantageous position that no other species adopts at such a crucial time. Scientific validation for these physiological claims comes from a 2013 review of 25 studies involving more than 5,200 women on upright birth outcomes. This analysis noted that outcomes for women who gave birth upright and mobile included a reduction in the risk of cesarean birth and less use of epidural as a method of pain relief. The review also highlighted a less chance of their babies being admitted to the neonatal unit, alongside fewer forceps, vacuum births, and episiotomies. Hannah Dolan, professor of midwifery at Australia's Western Sydney University, wrote in a 2013 op-ed for The Conversation that laboring upright and giving birth upright have advantages for both the mother and baby. Despite these findings, the review did note that more studies were needed for women in high-risk groups, as some studies have shown an increase in blood loss in upright birth positions. The environment itself dictates the position adopted, as demonstrated by research in 2011, where Dolan and her colleagues conducted a study on women in labor. They compared two settings: birth centers where supportive equipment such as balls, birth stools, and bean bags were available, and delivery wards where a medical hospital bed was the only option. They found the women in birth centers were far more likely to adopt upright positions during the first and second stage of labor, compared to a delivery ward setting. 82% adoption of upright positions occurred in birth centers versus 25% in delivery wards. This stark disparity reveals that institutional infrastructure enforces the recumbent position, limiting the mother's ability to utilize the 2 to 5 cm increase in pelvic diameter achieved by squatting. The data illustrates a conflict between institutional convenience and physiological reality that extends beyond the delivery room. While there is now awareness in Western countries of the concept of active birth, cesarean rates continue to rise alarmingly, despite the availability of options like midwife-led birth centers. Balaskas notes that in the UK, active birth has influenced change in maternity services, yet the trend persists. The system optimizes for the ease of monitoring and the historical habits of the medical profession, rather than the biological efficiency of the human body. When the environment dictates the posture, the body is forced to adapt to the machine rather than the machine adapting to the body. This suggests that the fragility observed in these medical systems is not a bug of technology, but a feature of prioritizing control over the complex, variable nature of human physiology. Consider the architecture of a modern computing stack. where a computed function knows only its immediate sources and subscribers within a dependency tree. In the era of Visi Calc, released for the Apple Roppen II at the end of 1979, design decisions were fundamentally about saving memory on a canvas of 63 columns and 254 rows. Today, that simplicity has vanished, replaced by complex dependency graphs where a single node lacks knowledge of the entire tree, creating inherent fragility. When distributed systems rely on external providers like Comcast or cloud hosts, a single point of failure can bring the system to its knees. Local hosting reduces these links, yet the industry gravitates towards centralized APIs like Anthropic, where the magic link between signals and computers hides the complexity of the underlying infrastructure. This externalized control mirrors the cognitive shift observed when humans offload reasoning to artificial systems, prioritizing speed over structural integrity. Researchers Shaw and Nave tested this vulnerability in a study involving 1,372 people given access to an AI chatbot during an adapted cognitive reflection test. The test included brainbusters like the question regarding 5 machines making 5 widgets in 5 minutes, requiring slow, deliberative reasoning rather than fast intuition. When the chatbot provided wrong answers, participants accepted the bad advice 80% of the time, effectively letting external processing trump their own brains. Even worse, those who used the AI rated their confidence 11.7% higher than those who did not, despite being incorrect. The authors describe this new artificial crutch as System 3, a layer that supplements internal cognition with externally processed insights. While Kahneman's original framework distinguished between fast intuition and slow deliberation, this modern integration reveals a seamless engagement where minimal friction or skepticism allows the external tool to override natural critical thinking. Processes. The organization measures performance in normal cases, but the expert sees the fragility accumulating in non-routine cases the framework cannot handle. This surrender of internal agency extends physically into medical institutions, where the environment dictates the outcome of labor. In 2011, Dahlin and her colleagues conducted a study comparing birth centers to delivery wards to understand how setting impacted position adoption. They found that 82% of women in birth centers adopted upright positions during labor, compared to only 25% in delivery wards, where a medical hospital bed was the only option. Despite evidence that upright birthing decreases the risk of cesarean birth and reduces the need for forceps or epidurals, cesarean rates continue to rise alarmingly in institutional settings. The standard medical bed tethers the mother to machines and monitors, overriding the instinctive movement that promotes efficient contractions and better oxygenation for the baby. Lying on the back compresses the aorta, whereas active birth allows freedom of movement. A review noted that upright positions decrease labor time and reduce the chance of babies being admitted to the neonatal unit. Yet the institutional preference for monitoring overrides these physiological advantages. Across software, cognition, and medicine, the drive for optimized efficiency creates systems where external control mechanisms override natural dependencies. Whether it is a dependency graph that cannot see the whole tree, a mind that trusts a chatbot over its own analysis, or a body restricted by a hospital bed, the architecture prioritizes manageability over resilience. This convergence suggests that when we optimize for external monitoring and standardized outputs, we inevitably sacrifice the robustness found in organic, self-regulating systems. The fragility is not an accident, but a feature of the design, yet the cost of this fragility only becomes visible when the routine cases fail. Just as Dan Bricklin realized at Harvard Business School in 1978, that calculations could be done on a computer, we now realize the cost of removing human judgment. The resolution only arrives when a non-routine case produces a catastrophic failure, briefly forcing agreement that expert judgment was undervalued. The recommendations invariably take the form of additional rules and frameworks, because that is the only form of knowledge the organization can process. The TC39 Proposal Signals Initiative currently sits at stage 1, signaling a potential shift where JavaScript frameworks could finally rely on a common native foundation rather than fragmented libraries. This standardization mirrors the evolution of reactive programming, a paradigm formalized in the 1970s that describes systems where data changes propagate automatically through dependent computations. Before this potential native standard, developers relied on libraries like Knockout JS from 2010 or RxJS from 2012 to bring reactive ideas to the browser. By unifying these foundations, the ecosystem avoids the fragility of maintaining separate abstractions that often override natural data dependencies. The signal represents a reactive value that can be read and modified, ensuring that when a signal changes, all parts of the application depending on it update automatically. This push-based algorithm reduces the need for manual implementation found in naive playground versions, allowing frameworks to retain the freedom to choose the API that best suits them while relying on a shared underlying truth. Experts like Ryan Carniato have discussed the evolution of signals in JavaScript, noting how this model moves beyond state-based rendering to something more functional. Podcast episodes like How Signals Work by Con Tejas Cove, featuring Kristen Meaven and Daniel Ehrenberg, further illuminate the deep mechanics required to understand this subject without oversimplification. A similar reclamation of natural agency occurs in obstetrics through the work of academics like Eileen Hutton, who runs the midwifery education program at Canada's McMaster University. Hutton notes that public education about birth options is vital because popular literature, television, and film consistently misrepresent the birthing process. This misrepresentation often supports institutional convenience over physiological outcomes, such as the supine labor position, which NICE guidelines advise against, despite it being the default in many media portrayals. Correcting this narrative allows women to choose what feels right for them, rather than succumbing to standardized but potentially compromised medical protocols. As Hutton states, providing a counterbalance to these media depictions could only be helpful, ensuring that knowledge remains power. When women are informed about their birthing choices, they become more comfortable in choosing what feels right, resisting the external control mechanisms that prioritize hospital efficiency over natural physiology. The essential list from BBC Future also highlights how trusted insights into health rooted in science can deliver handpicked selections of features and insights that counteract the noise. However, standardization and education alone cannot prevent cognitive surrender when external tools demand total reliance. Researchers Shaw and Nave tested 1,372 people using an adapted cognitive reflection test while providing access to an AI chatbot that sometimes gave wrong answers. Their findings demonstrate that people readily incorporate AI-generated outputs into decision-making with minimal friction, often substituting internal cognition with externally processed insights. One test question asked how long it would take 100 machines to make 100 widgets if 5 machines took 5 minutes for 5 widgets, requiring slow, deliberative reasoning rather than fast intuition. This dynamic mirrors the sitcom Home Improvement, where Tim Taylor accepted his neighbor Wilson's advice blindly without performing any cognitive reflection of his own. While Tim Taylor mangled Wilson's wisdom due to intuitive acceptance, AI-assisted cognitive surrender risks making the brain too gelatinous to read findings in detail. The study highlights the vulnerability of System 3 usage, where the value of integration clashes with the danger of offloading thinking to a chatbot. Peter Berger originally used the phrase cognitive surrender in a religious context in the 1990s to mean surrendering faith in God to relieve cognitive dissonance. We must maintain internal cognitive reflection alongside AI assistance, but this requires recognizing that the most efficient path often demands the least resistance from the user. I found myself reading an old text recently, something about Resh Lakish. He sought to base the length of the workday on a Psalm verse, grounding the rights of the worker on the very order of creation. He thought the biblical text was in agreement with the rational nature of things because they were created. Or at least, he thought that the natural law attached to the person of the worker and consecrated by the Torah guarantees better than custom the rights of the person. It struck me how that connects to what we are discussing. We are talking about systems that override natural laws for the sake of custom or efficiency, whether it is a hospital bed or a chatbot. We are treating the natural state as something to be managed rather than respected. Resh Lakish understood that there is a law inherent in the person that custom cannot override without cost. When we optimize for speed, we risk violating that law. We trade the guarantee of our own agency for the comfort of the rule. Real stability often demands we embrace the messy inefficiencies that allow us to adapt when the perfect plan inevitably collapses. That's Inertia for today. Find the essay and sources at Inertia Podcast, pages, dev. Until next time.